On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. As American soldiers are under fire on the front lines, it's their families who are bearing the cost of war at home. Spouses have to manage tight budgets and irritable children, household chores and jobs. And the vast majority of Americans don't really understand what a military family must give up. This hour, On Point, we hear from military wives, their lives and their sacrifices while their husbands are at war. Joining me now from Columbus, Ohio, is Dina Seferi. Her husband is 1st Cavalry Division Sergeant, 1st Class Patrick Seferi. He's serving in Baghdad with the 4th Brigade Combat Team out of Fort Bliss, Texas, where she lives with her two kids. Dina, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Also with us from Columbus, Ohio, is Tiffany Wanzer. Her husband, 1st Cavalry Division Specialist Joshua Wanzer, is serving in Baghdad with Dina's husband, and she lives in Ohio with her daughters and her mother while her husband is deployed. Tiffany, great to have you as well.
Thanks.
Dina, let me start with you. You are 34 years old, and I wish you'd tell us a little bit about your family.
Okay, well, I have two children, an 11-year-old boy and a 3-year-old girl. She just turned 3 in May. And we are staying back at Bliss while my husband's deployed. And just kind of hanging out for the summer, waiting for my husband to get back home.
And when does he come home?
They're scheduled to come back in January, as of now.
And this deployment has been how long for you?
It has been, well, at the end of it, it'll be 15 months.
Is that longer than you thought it might be?
They were originally scheduled for 12 months, so with the extension, that's an extra 3 months. So, yeah, it is longer, unfortunately.
Right. What's a typical day like for you, Dina?
Typical day right now is get up, make the kids breakfast, watch a little TV, and from there, just kind of see what the kids want to do that day. I'm not working right now, decided to stay home with the kids during this deployment. I am a mental health nurse, but with the deployment, during the summer, my son decided he didn't want to go to daycare during the summer. Mm-hmm. I decided they needed a little extra attention, so mm-hmm. I'm not working. Mm-hmm. And with that, just kind of hang out with the kids, and whatever they want to do for the day, that's what we do.
And how often do you talk to your husband on the phone or email him or communicate with him?
Well, we're not really communicating through email. He's just so busy over there. But he does try to call me once a day. They're going on missions every single day. So he has a cell phone over there. He tries to call me once a day to let me know he's okay. Excuse me. Sometimes it's for a minute. Sometimes it's for 5 minutes. But just to let me know he's okay, he's safe, he's alive, he does try to call me once a day.
And is it true that you do not leave your house until you have heard from your husband?
That is true. That is true. The kids will want to do something, and I'll say, well, as soon as Dad calls. We're not going until Dad calls. Mm. That is true.
Have there been times when you haven't heard from him?
Yes. Yes, there is. And it does make me nervous. It's scary. But I will try to call him. I mean, I have his cell phone number, and you'll get these messages like, excuse me, like you can't get through, or, the person you're trying to reach is either out of the area or the phone is off, or, sometimes you get this message that is in a different language. I guess it's like an Iraqi language or whatever. And then I just assume he's on a mission or his phone is off or whatever. But, I just wait or I keep trying. But until I hear from him and I know he's okay and he's alive, we don't go anywhere.
And that could be 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and you're still waiting.
Right. Or 4 or 5 in the morning. So,
Tiffany, let me turn to you. Tell me why you decided to leave Texas, where your husband is based at Fort Bliss, to move to Ohio.
Sure. One of the main reasons I did decide to leave El Paso, Texas, was because my support system was mainly back in Ohio. My mother's back here. My in-laws are back here, only an hour from me. And it was very hard for me to get a job down there because I was not bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, you know, it's time to finish my education. I had been previously a student at The Ohio State University and didn't have that much longer to complete, 3 quarters at the most. So I decided, pack it up, go home, be around people who were going to support me during this time, and try to save a little bit of money, you know, staying with my mom, helping her out around the house, and helping out with utilities and rent and such. So, and you know, the kids really like to have their grandparents around. I think it really helps.
And you have two kids, an 8-year-old and a 20-month-old, is that right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. So I got my hands full.
You do. What is
just like Dina.
what would you say is the hardest part of your husband's deployment on you?
Oh, you know, the hardest part is just him not being here, especially for the kids that need him. Like you said, my daughter is 20 months old, so when he deployed initially in November, she was only 10 months old. You know, she was not walking. Very much baby-like still. Mm. So he did miss her first birthday. And when we found out about the extensions that we're going to push them back until January, there's another birthday. There's number two.
And holidays.
Two Christmases, two Thanksgivings, it's everything. So that it really broke my heart and his. And
so how do you deal with that? Do you save up your celebrations for when he comes home, or do you just have to go on and live your life?
Well, you know, a little bit of both. You know, I keep myself busy. I keep my kids busy. You know, they're very active. They both go to, like, summer camp programs or daycare. And I'm very busy myself. You know, I go to school full time. I work. I'm with the kids. So you know, we just try to keep busy. And as far as, like, the holidays go, we go on. You know, his parents are only an hour away. Mm-hmm. So we see them quite frequently, which is really nice. And if he decide, you know, if he's coming home in January, of course that Christmas will be, you know, put on hold because that's only a couple weeks later. So definitely.
Dina, how do you go about, you know, Tiffany mentioned going to school and work and the kids. I mean, how do you go about the daily routine of life, the seemingly trivial things of life compared to what, you know, your husband is doing in a hostile environment in Baghdad? He's in combat every day, in danger. How do you do that?
You know what helps me make it through is actually I'm in a group called Military Family Speak Out. And I'm on the board of directors for this group. And I find that that helps me a lot because it helps me actually vent what is actually my anger towards this war. Mm. And it helps me channel some of this. And, you know, what we do and what our mission is to try to get our soldiers home and try to, you know, what we want to do is to get them home and to have them taken care of when they get here. And, you know, and it really does help me, and it helps me focus on, you know, the positive, you know, of my daily routine. And, you know, every day it gives me something to look forward to. And my husband really supports me in this because although he is over there in Iraq, he knows that this war is not right. You know, although he is there and he's fighting the war, he knows it's not right. Just like so many of the other soldiers know it's not right, but they're there because they have to be there.
Tiffany, do you think people understand what you go through on a daily basis, what you have to sacrifice as a military wife?
You know, I don't necessarily think they can you know, understand, but I'll tell you that many people have been really supportive when they do find out that I am a military wife and that my husband is deployed. People have been very supportive, strangers out of the blue. In fact, you know, shaking my hand, giving me a hug, saying thank you. You know, you've got a tough job, and I could never imagine. So,
but do you tend to gravitate toward Dina and other members of your husband's unit, the wives, because they understand sort of what you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis?
Actually, just to make real quick, I'm a member of MFSO and have
military
also,
family
and
support.
Have yeah military families speaking out here in Columbus. I actually did back in May, veterans. We did actually a troop march for troops. Some of these retired and active duty troop members marched around the courthouse in opposition of the war. I did say a little prayer. Just trying to get some public support behind us, you know, because we are the voice of these men and women that are over there. You know, my husband especially is just like Dina's husband in the fact that they have no idea why they're over there anymore.
Right.
I mean, it's just become what is going on. This is my husband's second deployment in 3 years.
My guests today are three women, Dina Safari, Tiffany Wanzer, and now joining us from Edisto Island, South Carolina, is Kristen Henderson. Her husband is a military chaplain who has served in Afghanistan and Iraq. She is a journalist and author of While They're at War, The True Story of American Families on the Home Front. Kristen, so great to have you with us. Thanks.
You're very welcome.
You were married to your husband for 13 years when he joined the military. What was your reaction when he said, I'm changing course?
I knew this was something he'd always felt called to do. So, you know, part of being married is supporting each other's dreams. I knew nothing about the military. In fact, my family is Quaker, who are pacifists. So it really was all new to me. But I said, well, if you feel led to do that, I'll be supportive. But I figured that was his job, you know, not mine.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked until September 11th. And then he started deploying with the Marines to war zones.
He deployed to the Persian Gulf in 1999, and that was peacetime, right?
That was peacetime, exactly.
And so how was it different when he left for Afghanistan and then Iraq?
Well, having gone through one extended deployment, I thought I knew what to expect. And that's a common misconception, you know, the idea that they're all the same. And I'm sure that Dina and Tiffany can tell you that each one is different. I mean, you do learn coping skills, but each one is a new mountain to climb because you're in a different place and your children are in a different place, so the challenges are new.
What sorts of coping skills do you use? Did you utilize? Are you utilizing?
Well, you know, like Dina, I went home for one of the deployments and I stayed with my sister. And I was thinking how incredibly supportive that would be, and it was. I mean, my family loves me and was very supportive, but like me, before my husband joined, they knew nothing about the military. So, you know, even though my sister had a front row seat on what I was going through, I kept a lot of it hidden. When she read the book, she said, you know, later, she said, Kristen, I had no idea, because it was all written after the fact. I mean, she would ask me each day, you know, Kristen, how are you doing? And I'd say, oh, fine.
Were you just uncomfortable opening up, or?
Yeah, I mean, when it's such an emotional roller coaster, that if you're on the verge of tears or, you know, keeping that under control, talking about it will just make you cry and ruin the rest of your day. It's simpler sometimes not to talk about it with someone to whom you have to explain too much. And I think that's why it's helpful to be with other military spouses who know what you're going through, because you don't have to explain, you know, when or why you might need a hug. They understand. They already know.
You've talked a lot about anticipatory grief, you call it. What is that?
Well, that's part of what makes it so different, you know, the difference between a peacetime and a wartime deployment. During a wartime deployment, it never leaves your mind that your husband or spouse is in danger and may not come home. And whether or not you talk about it or you know, it's always at the back of your mind every waking moment. And that takes a toll. And what I learned when I was researching the book is that it's very common for these spouses to be going through the same symptoms as people who have a loved one with a terminal illness, and that's called anticipatory grief. And this brings with it actual physical symptoms.
Such as?
Panic attacks, insomnia, crying jags, imagining the funeral quite a bit. And when I heard these symptoms, you know, my jaw dropped, because I had all these same symptoms while my husband was deployed. I just didn't know what it was. And when you don't know what it is, you feel like it's just you. You know, you have no idea anyone else is going through this, and you feel like you're a little crazy. So just knowing that it's normal is very helpful.
And I heard also that at one point you just envisioned the worst, and that made it actually easier for you to cope after that.
Well, for me, it had become sort of like the monster in the closet. I kept trying to push those images of the uniformed officers coming to my door to the back of my mind and not think about it. I thought, that's just too morbid. But finally, one day in the shower, where you can safely cry where no one will hear you, I let myself walk through the whole process as I understood it, the knock at the door, how the casualty notification is made, who I would call, what I would do during the funeral. I just let myself cry about it. And it made me feel like, okay, this is manageable. I can do this if it happens, even though, of course, there's no way to know how you would really react. But it made me feel like I had some control. And that was helpful to me because you have so little that you control during a deployment that anything that makes you feel like that is helpful.
Dina and Tiffany, does this sound familiar to you, this anticipatory grief, sort of these feelings, this emotional roller coaster that Kristen's describing? Dina?
Of course it does, yes. I think everybody goes through that.
What about you, Tiffany?
Absolutely. And when she was when she was discussing that right then and there, I could just remember going through all that, especially imagining the funeral. It is something that I live with, and it actually does help. I mean, when you had asked early, especially about the military wives, because I don't have that support group since I'm not on post. My family is a great support group, and so are his parents, which are they were Air Force vets. So, but yes, I did the same thing. The whole what did you call it? I'm sorry.
Anticipatory grief.
I apologize, but that is exactly what I have experienced several times.
So it's a sensitive question, but are you always waiting for the bad news? You know, do you dread when the doorbell rings what that might bring?
I'll tell you what, there have been several occasions because, you know, I don't have many visitors. We don't have many visitors unannounced at my mother's house. And I can remember a couple of times when I heard the doorbell or a knock at the door, and I got lightheaded, and my heart would just palpitations. I thought that I was going to pass out, and then immediately a panic attack set in. I didn't want to answer the door. I didn't know what to do, you know. And the one time I was alone, so I couldn't ask my mom to answer the door. So I'm peeking out the window. I'm like, oh, goodness. You know, I didn't see a car in the driveway or out by the street, so I figured I was safe in that respect, maybe like a neighborhood newspaper boy or something. So, yeah, definitely. Those, you know, just a knock on the door or something like that. And, you know, lately I've experienced a few physical things as well. I actually had to have a test the other day because of my heartburn and acid reflux, the doctor told me was exactly related to stress, you know? So, which, you know,
just
like I said, I'm in school
physically.
And all that. It really is.
Dina, let me ask you, you're on base. You're there at Fort Bliss in Texas. Do you have friends, other military wives, who have indeed gotten that knock on the door?
Well, yes, we've actually lost, my husband actually lost his gunner off of his tank. It was 4 months after the deployment. And I'm the FRG leader for our company, which is the family readiness group. And so that took a toll on all of us.
And so what happens in a moment like that? Do you band together? Do you surround this woman and this family? And
well, she wasn't there on post. She was actually she had joined the Army herself. So she was in basic training. So she wasn't there when it happened, but we do all try to band together and for support and for her support and her family's support. So, but since our unit deployed, I think we've lost 19 out of our unit. So, you know, we try to give all the support we can. But, yeah, there has been several that have gotten the knock, you know. And I mean, I can identify with it. It's terrible. I mean, I can remember, I don't know what why I even panic at a knock on the door, too. But even one time I remember, I think it was the UPS man came to the door, and I freaked out. And I told my son, don't get the door, don't get the door. And he's like, Mom, it's okay. And I told him, no, don't answer the door. And I just, you know, I started freaking out for no reason. And then he's like, Mom, it's the UPS man. You know, and I don't know why I did it. And you know, it's just something.
It's an emotional response.
You just get scared sometimes.
Kristen, how do you deal with repeated deployments over and over again? I know your husband was in the Gulf for 6 months and then Afghanistan for 7 months and Baghdad for many more months. How do you do it?
Well, you know, it is a challenge when they're repeated because every time that soldier or Marine or airman or sailor comes home, they're a different person. But what gets, and we're often very aware of that because of the education of movies and TV and news and all that, we forget that those of us left behind are also changing and learning new skills and growing. So we're different, too. So you have to kind of renegotiate that marriage contract. And
and so what is reentry like, then?
It varies. And again, you think you know what to expect, and you don't. Each time my husband came home, it was different. Mm-hmm. When he came home in peacetime, I was afraid we had grown apart and that we would find we liked being apart, you know, better than together. And we wound up, you know, that time apart gave us space to break all our little bickery habits and to really appreciate each other. So it was like a honeymoon when he came home. So I was expecting that the second time. Well, when he came back from Afghanistan, that was after 9/11, we had been very stressed. It was we were both pretty brittle, and that was a very rocky homecoming. We were fighting within hours of when he came home. At one point, I threw a styrofoam cup at him, which was, I guess, better than slugging him, and he threw it back. You know, just because he's a minister doesn't mean we're both angels. And we only had 9 months between that deployment and when he left for Iraq, and that's really not much time, and that's what's happening to these families, is they're trying to deal with the challenges of one deployment, and then suddenly there's another one on top of them, and then you have new issues when they come back from that one, so it tends to accumulate. Now, in our case, when he came back from Iraq, I was anticipating the worst, because I knew his experiences there had been even more intense than in Afghanistan. However, you know, again, we were different, and I was determined to be very flexible, and, you know, I pictured myself as a quilt on the line in the wind, and I would just wrap myself around him if he needed it and back off if he didn't. And he came back with kind of the same feeling. I mean, he, based on what he'd seen and how, you know, how people suffer in Iraq, he came back feeling like, man, Americans don't appreciate what we've got. And he was determined not to sweat the small stuff. And it was a very, very tender reunion. Our relationship was really strengthened after Iraq.
Each one is very different. Many callers are lined up to join this conversation, ladies. Let me turn to Corey, who's in Fort Drum, New York. Corey, hi, you're on the line.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband's about to go on his first deployment, so it's a little bit of a different situation than all the other ladies you have on. We have a 3-year-old and a 3-month-old, and it's going to be a 15-month deployment, so we're looking forward to him coming back right before she turns 5, the oldest, or, you know, if it's extended, probably right after.
Are you nervous? What are your emotions or your feelings going into this?
I'm nervous, and the anticipatory grief thing really hit a chord. His family in Ohio had a going-away party for him, and I had a panic attack. I didn't know what it was at the time. There goes a 3-year-old. Are you okay? Oh, I'm sorry, kiddo.
You know what? We'll let you attend to her, Corey.
No, that's
okay.
I got really short of breath, and I just had to walk away from the festivities, so to speak. And a little bit of a different situation that you have as a first-time as the wife of a first-time deploying soldier, you don't really feel like you have any room to complain, especially on Fort Drum, which is a really high op-tempo post. I'm around wives whose husbands have been gone 2 or 3 times.
Right.
You know, this is their second or third deployment. And you just, no matter what you're feeling, you just really don't feel like you have room to complain.
Well, Corey, we wish you luck with those kids and in the upcoming months. Thank you. Dina and Tiffany, Corey brings up a good point about the children. And I'd like to ask you about how you deal with these long deployments with your kids. How do you prepare them for dad leaving and then dad coming back, even if just for a short time?
You know, I found that you just really have to be honest with them. You have to have a lot of patience. With my 11-year-old, he's been through it. I mean, we have gone through so many deployments with my husband. And my son Tyler is just used to it. Tyler and I have a real close relationship. Patrick, my husband's been deploying since Tyler was a baby. And
this deployment has been especially hard for him, hasn't it?
It has. Tyler's done a lot of growing up, I guess you would say, since Patrick's been gone. He's had a lot of added responsibilities, and because he's getting older. Mm-hmm. But Tyler, he knows that he knows the Army life. Mm-hmm. His dad is always gone. I mean, since Tyler has been a baby, his dad has gone to Kuwait several times. He spent a year in Korea.
I heard that the last time your husband was home, your son joked that he was going to break his leg to keep
him
home.
He did. When Patrick was home for R&R, and Tyler's a big boy. He's mm-hmm. about 5'2", and he's 150 pounds. For an 11-year-old, he's big. And he was trying to wrestle with my husband, and he was saying, I'm going to break Dad's leg. He's not going back. Mm-hmm. And I was like, good luck with that, buddy, you know, because my husband is like hardcore soldier. He's a platoon sergeant, and there's just no way he would ever leave his guys out there. And
Tiffany, how does your 8-year-old deal with it? And do you shield your child from the news, from what's going on overseas?
You know, the news isn't a big thing in my household anymore, being so busy. But like Dina said, you know, you just got to be honest, and you got to be there for your kids if they have any questions. My daughter's had lots of questions, actually, like about war and why. I mean, even why are we there? What's going on? Why are they fighting? Mm-hmm. Why is Daddy Josh fighting?
And what do you tell them?
Actually, because that's her stepfather. Mm. You know, and I try to do my best, actually. You know, there's bad people in this world, and Daddy Josh stepped up to help defend this country and try to make everybody back here safe, you know, and to protect his family, and that's why he's there. And she, you know what, she's a trooper. She's a great kid, and has been doing amazing. Now my youngest daughter, which it really breaks my heart, you know, because she left, or he had left when she was 10 months old, you know. Mm-hmm. He missed her first birthday. He now, due to the extensions, he's going to be missing her second birthday. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when he comes home, for her, not just him, it's going to be a real
adjustment.
Big adjustment. You know, like it will be for my 8-year-old as well.
And for you,
but
too.
Absolutely. It will be. And it was for the last time he came home.
My guests this hour are Dina Seferi and Tiffany Wanzer, whose husbands are serving together in Iraq. Also with us is Kristen Henderson, author of While They're at War, The True Story of American Families on the Front Line. Kristen, your husband is also serving. You've written this book, and I wonder, of all the women that you've spoken with, what's the general consensus that you get from them? What's the feeling that you have when you talk to these women whose husbands are serving overseas about their experience, at what they're dealing with, and their emotional state during this very difficult time?
Well, I think it's important for your listeners to understand that that military families cross the whole political range, just like Americans. You know, many believe, as Tiffany and Dina do, that that the war is misguided, and there are others who feel 180 degrees the opposite. But whatever their political orientation, the emotions are the same. They're mm-hmm. all going through the same difficulties. And that's actually been one of the great lessons to me as I've learned about this military life. I came into it in ignorance. Is how a diverse community with people who believe exactly opposite things can still come together and focus on what connects them as human beings. You know, mm-hmm. this experience, the feelings that we're all feeling, you know, the anticipatory grief. It doesn't matter what your politics are. Mm-hmm. We're all feeling that same thing. We're all worried about our husbands or wives.
How much does your husband share with you, Kristen, about what goes on where he is, the experiences he's having, the conversations he's having with those soldiers? He's a chaplain.
Well, he never reveals what they tell him, mm-hmm. Because actually, whatever you say to a chaplain, that's the only person in the military that what you say is completely confidential mm-hmm. and actually cannot be reported. So it's sort of a safety valve, a safe place to go talk about anything. But in general, he's pretty open with me. He doesn't try to shield me from what he's going through or what he's seeing. But that works for us. It doesn't work for all couples. Some spouses tell their soldier, you know, I really don't want to know. That just feeds my fear. Mm-hmm. And for others, information is helpful. Some spouses want to know, but their soldier feels like he or she has to protect them. Mm-hmm. And that may not be helpful, because what happens sometimes is they wind up shutting them out. So it's important to have open communication about what each person needs, because it's going to be different from couple to couple.
Mm-hmm. Back to the phones now, to Webster City, Iowa, and Candy, who's on the line. Hi, Candy. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
My husband was in Vietnam, and during that time, I delivered our first child.
Mm-hmm.
He was a helicopter crew chief and gunner. I felt very alone, very unsupported. I lived in Iowa, and not near a military base, where presumably there might have been some support. Very few of the young men in our area were sent to Vietnam. Very few even went into the military. Most of them actually went into the Guards so that they could avoid being sent to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that the support was really with my family, my parents, my sisters, my in-laws.
So you've been through this, Candy. What do you tell these women? What would you say to them these many years later, having gone through it yourself, about the experience and maybe some advice?
I'm not sure that I have the advice. I just know that in listening to the program, I was compelled to call in because the emotions are still there.
Hmm.
That I just felt so isolated, and that no one really cared very much about what was going on in Vietnam. They all had their other lives, and other things were happening, and yet every night I watched the war. And I think that's the difference between World War II, Korea. I saw that war on television every night, and I know these women do too.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was listening to how many helicopters were shot down, and then waiting for that green car to pull in the driveway, for that knock on the door. It's the fear. And that fear is still very real. And I still shed tears when I watch what's going on today in Afghanistan and the Middle East. So I don't know if I have, you know, if I have advice. I just can empathize.
You understand.
Because I've been there.
Candy, thanks so much for your call. Dina and Tiffany, I would turn to you. Do you feel that way, that sort of people have their lives and they're going about their business, and here you are living a very difficult period when, you know, a lot of people are not sacrificing like you are?
Yes. You know, yes. You know what Candy said is so right. And sometimes I will sit in my bed at night, and I think, how can America not care about this war? And, you know, I will hear people say, is this war still going on? Mm. Gosh, and this Iraq thing, it's still happening. And I will sit there and think, how can America not know about this? And how can America not care? And how can America, all these Americans, not stand up and not do anything about this war? And why is America not wanting to stop this war like the rest of us? And, you know, it seems like if they don't have a loved one in Iraq, or if they're not being affected by this, you know, they don't care. And
Kristen,
they're not out there doing anything about it,
right,
if it's not affecting their family or their loved ones. And to me, it's just ridiculous.
Kristen, is that what you sense, that people, you know, sort of go about their lives and they don't really understand the sacrifices that are being made?
Well, it is a huge experiment for our democracy. I mean, the first Persian Gulf War in the early 90s and these wars, Afghanistan and Iraq, are the first time in our history where we have fought major conflicts without full-scale mobilization of our citizens. And, you know, without the support of the people in a democracy, wars cannot be won. And so figuring out how to do this, you know, less than 1% of the population serves in the active duty, reserves, and National Guard combined. That's a very tiny number. I compare that to, I think it was 11 or 12% during World War II. And so very few people know what's involved. They don't have any firsthand experience in terms of what it means to go to war. I mean, it's a messy commitment. As Senator Chuck Hagel pointed out, war is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a risk. And there are other tools in the toolbox, diplomatic tools and that sort of thing. But without the knowledge of, you know, what's at risk when you go to war, it's hard to make an informed decision. Mm-hmm. It's hard to know if the cause of the hour is worth fighting for. So
let me go back.
I'm not sure what the solution is, but we as a country do need to have this conversation and figure out how do we do this, because the military doesn't have to be as big as it used to be with all the increase in technology. So how do we figure out how to make commitments in terms of international conflict that makes sense for us if people don't have that experience anymore?
Back to the phones now to Rachel, who is calling from Sumter, South Carolina. Hi, Rachel. You're on the line.
Hi, ladies. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband is currently deployed to Afghanistan. We're 2 months as of today from his mid-tour leave. He'll be home in April or May of next year.
Mm-hmm.
He will have been gone for a total of 15 months when he returns. And then so this is kind of an unusual situation for an Air Force wife, because the usual rotation is 4 months. And
how has it been for you so far?
It's really been a surreal experience. For two reasons. The earlier caller said she didn't feel like she had a right to complain. You know, I felt the same way in the beginning for two reasons. One, because I thought, well, you know, the wives of soldiers and Marines have got it so much worse than me. And the other thing is that this is the first time that our troops have been in combat, and we've had the technology to stay in fairly close contact with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everyone, but some people do. And I instant message with my husband a few days a week, and I feel very, very fortunate to be able to do that. But it doesn't mean that I didn't go through what you call anticipatory grief.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I had to be a strong person in Iraq. I couldn't admit that this was so hard for me, partly for the reasons I just detailed. And so after he had been gone for only 2 months, he was still in training at Fort Riley. He's attached to the Army in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
I had an anxiety attack that lasted a week, and as a result of that, I spent a couple of months trying to recover from this, and you know, I'm seeing a therapist. I'm taking anxiety medications. Mm. I just completely fell apart. Our routine just dissolved, and it's taken me until this point to really kind of get it back together. And how I was able to do that, besides therapy, of course, is to focus on the larger goal, which is that when my husband gets back, within about 6 weeks, we will be moving to South Dakota.
You look toward the future.
Right.
Well, Rachel, I wish you the best, and I sure appreciate your call. Thank you. Kristen, how important is that to sort of look to what's ahead, to focus on the future and not the here and now necessarily?
That's really helpful, and it helps connect you with your deployed service member too.
Mm-hmm.
If you're both doing that, and it's easy for that to get lost, because particularly for the one who's deployed, they're focused on getting through each day, and you know, just surviving at a certain point. And the same thing happens on the home front when you've got so much going on. I mean, the two women you have on are, you know, going to school full time and working and children. That's a lot to have on your plate.
Mm-hmm.
And so focusing on the future does help you kind of, you know, this is something we can think about together and not drift apart on that. But I also think that the busyness of the women that we're talking to points to another challenge that they face, and that is the hit that a family income often takes during a deployment. You know, just in general, military life it requires a lot of moves, and as a result, the incomes of women who are married to military men compared to women who are married to civilians are about a third to a half less on the military side.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, their careers take a hit because particularly when a deployment comes up, if you're in school and you've just got enough time, you know, to manage all those challenges, and suddenly there's a deployment coming and you're going to lose the other half, you know, part of your family, you're going to be picking up a lot more responsibilities at home. You may have to quit that class or turn down a promotion at work. or quit work altogether in order mm-hmm. to focus on the kids' needs. And so the family income does take a hit.
Finances, yeah, another big part of it. Tiffany and Dina, I want to ask you as we sort of wrap up this hour, I hear a great deal of strength in your voices. I am surprised you're not more emotional, actually, when you speak about some of this. And so I wonder, when you do get emotional, when does it hit you? When do you sort of break down?
You know, like I said, busyness is the key here. I keep myself as busy as possible along with the kids. But when it really does happen is towards the end of the day, when it all slows down, you know, and my mind really has time to think about what's going on. You know, I do get lonely and I do go through some anxiety. But like Dina is able to speak to her husband quite frequently, I'm the same way, and it helps a lot. The caller that had called in and said, you know, the technology nowadays, you're able to speak with your husbands. Yeah,
makes
that
all
helps.
The difference.
Yeah. Oh, my husband can see my little one on webcam and everything. Mm. So it really, really does help. But it's usually towards the end of the day mm-hmm. after I put the kids to bed and I'm sitting there.
Alone.
And, you know, but I try to stay as strong as possible for my family.
So, Dina, what has all this taught you about your husband, your relationship, and yourself?
What it's taught me is that, you know, my relationship with my husband can withstand pretty much anything. I've known that pretty much all along. We've been married a long time. I know that it can withstand anything. It will probably withstand more deployments, unfortunately. And I can tell you, when I break down is when, you know, we lose our soldiers. That's when it gets to me. That's the worst of it. Hopefully, you know, we'll bring them back soon. That's, you know, what I'm striving for. That's what I'm hoping for. So we don't lose any more of our guys or girls. You know, if we can just bring them home, that's what I pray for. That's what I hope our country will pray for.
Kristen, what do you think is the message from these women and from this hour about what Americans need to understand about the sacrifices that are being made by these women?
Well, I think it's hard for people to know how to help if they haven't lived it. I know I wouldn't have had a clue without walking in these shoes. So one thing I have done is tried to educate, you know, the civilians around me and how they can help. And actually do have a list on my website for those who want to do something practical and something, you know, something real that'll make a difference. They can go to KristenHenderson.com, and that's K-R-I-S-T-I-N Henderson.com. And there's a list of suggestions of things that civilians can do to make a difference.
We appreciate your time, ladies. Thank you very much. Kristen Henderson is joining us from Edisto Island, South Carolina. Her husband is a military chaplain, currently stationed in Japan, where she'll join him this fall. Kristen, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
Tiffany Wanzer, her husband, is currently deployed to Baghdad until January of next year. 1st Cavalry Division Specialist Joshua Wanzer is her husband. He's serving with the 4th Brigade Combat Team based in Fort Bliss. Tiffany, good luck to you and your children, 8 years old and 20 months. Take care.
Thank you very much.
And Dina Safari, her husband, is currently deployed to Baghdad until January, raising her two children, 11-year-old son and 3-year-old daughter alone. Good luck to you, Dina. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. And I do want to invite everybody to look at MFSO.org, all the military families. Thank you.
Thanks, Dina. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.